Wrestling Powerhouse Radio at blogtalkradio.com. You can interact with the show by calling 760-888-5749 or use the hashtag PWPRadio on Twitter. Here are your hosts, Jay Leno and Will TLD Vampides.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio, PWP Radio. That's right, Will TLD is finally back on the air after a two-month absence, but I am not alone. Every Sunday night, you can catch Heartbeat Radio every Sunday with the legendary Bruce Hart. I'm now going to welcome in Bruce Hart to the show. Bruce, welcome back. Another Sunday evening with PWP Radio. How is everything going up in Canada?
Oh, good. Nice to be hooking up with you again. Well, it was kind of interesting, the whole show. I imagine we'll be able to chew the fat, as they say. Got a lot of stuff to talk about. So it should be an interesting show. I'm sure some of the callers and the listeners will be, kind of giving us their perspectives and So, mixed bag of different stuff tonight. What was your take on the show, Will?
Well, I thought everything as far as the show had a great purpose on the show. I think every match had a point to the show. I think Money in the Bank was good. I went to last year's Money in the Bank show, which I thought was very well done. And just going to one of those shows in person, especially a gimmick show, is usually – you can't really go wrong, and not to mention being in Boston, the crowd makes a huge impact to the show as well. And on television, the crowd seemed like they were having a good time. The first Money in the Bank match was obviously probably the best match on the show. We'll have thoughts and opinions on the winners and the main event. But overall, I mean, what was your thought on the overall show before we dive into the details of it?
Yeah, I thought there was some good stuff, outcomes that were kind of intriguing, and I think one of the problems I had with it, it reminded me of going to a damn smorgasbord, and you almost stuff your guts by the after the first three or four matches, and you've almost had so much overkill and all like that that by the time you get to the main event, you're almost half, kind of stuffed and tired. And I thought there was a bit too much stuff on there to digest. I didn't really need to see maybe two or three of the other lame charades. I could have done without, and I probably would have been better off there. Maybe like stuffing my face with too much bread and too much salad, too much crap before I get to the prime rib, but some of the stuff I might be referring to is the Damian Sandow nonsense with Adam Rose, and I think we probably could have done without the second Divas match. It didn't add anything to it, and for me, I would have been fine if I hadn't been inflicted with a rerun of Vicky Guerrero and Stephanie's, mud wrestling nonsense, or some of that kind of almost, it's an old saying, more isn't better, so I sort of felt that was maybe one of the biggest detractions. It was just too damn much, but I thought there was some good stuff, all things considered, not easy to unload some of those finishes for some of those matches, But that last match was intriguing to me. It reminded me of this old movie I saw way back when called It's a Mad, Mad World or whatever, where they're, on a fire truck ladder and they're trying to get the suitcase full of money, and they're, almost reminded me of that, to a certain degree, but I thought the guys in that match busted their asses, so they seem like they're all pretty trying their damnedest, you know, and trying to sustain the intensity. I was a little bit intrigued, you know, certainly, you know, they got about eight guys in that last match, and one of the parts that I found hard to fathom was that at any given time, six guys, I'm not sure if they went out to the washrooms or were having a smoke at ringside or what, but all of a sudden there's like none of them in sight and two guys, you know, at the top of the ladder. And then that happened over and over and over in the match, where it's like these two guys isolated on each other and nobody else in sight, even though there was no discernible pretext for the other six guys to not be around, you know. So that was one of the parts that I found a little bit, you know, kind of hard to fathom. Or after a while, it became almost routine to the point where you're almost rolling your eyes at it a bit. But what were some of your takes on that last one, Will?
As far as the match goes, the one thing about the match that I hate is one of the things you're talking about, where they're on the outside of the ring for a long period of time, where you totally forget maybe sometimes they're even in the match, and that does happen to a degree. But also, I kind of look at it as somewhat of a strategy if it's played off that way, where if they're just waiting for the right moment to go in the ring and climb the ladder, you know, that would be, to me, it would make more sense for someone to wait until the right moment. But I thought every guy in that match was desperately trying to get to those titles, which I think was the purpose. It wasn't about the spots like in the other Money in the Bank ladder match. This one was about climbing it. They were all trying to climb, and they all had their stories, especially with Kane and Randy Orton. Kane's sole purpose out there was just to help Randy Orton win. So I thought that was an intriguing part, where how unfair and, you know, that was. But John Cena, in the end, you know, he's the most over guy in the company, and defeating all those guys, you know, I'm not saying it was predictable, but, you know, they have Brian Strong. And then even top guy.
I thought it was entirely predictable as soon as Seth Rollins won the other ladder match, which for me, I think they would have been better off just having one damn ladder match on the card. They could have saved the next one for the next Battleground pay-per-view or something like that, or whatever the hell, you know. For me, it was way too much overkill. But beyond having two ladder matches on the same card, which kind of, they flogged the whole climbing and climbing and climbing and all that, you know, for me, too much, you know, one would have been more than enough. The thing that I found a little bit, you know, kind of took away from the second ladder matches, for me, as soon as Seth Rollins won it, it narrowed down, in my estimation, the outcome. You almost knew that it was going to be either Roman Reigns or Cena winning it, because it wouldn't have made any great sense for, you know, Seth Rollins to be fighting Kane or Randy Orton or you know, Cesaro or some of those other guys, you know, wouldn't have had any, made any great sense for him to be, you know, kind of fighting another heel or coming out with the Money in the Bank against any of them. So, but yeah, I think it was, you know, that's one of the things I've long been somewhat critical of WWE, is they have this more is better mindset all the time. So instead of having just one gimmick match on a card, they have four or five, or instead of having just one Divas thing, they have to have, you know, two or three Divas things on the same card. And instead of having a little bit of comic relief, like tonight they had about three or four needless, kind of, for what I thought was comic relief charades, with Damian doing the Paul Revere and replaying the Vicky and Stephanie Mudbath abortion or whatever the hell, and there's a couple of other lame kind of comic relief things that I didn't think needed to be added on. Even Layla and that Summer Rae Fandango abortion, you know. So for me, I think if you had taken away that, and even the Rusev thing, I thought was all right. They exceeded my expectations, but it still was kind of not a five-star, you know, showstopper type match either. You know, it was about the best you expect from, you know, like Godzilla and King Kong or something like that. You know, but yeah, I think I could have done without two or three of the other matches, and I think it would have been, you know, better. I would rather have just, frankly, devoted my emotions and my attention to maybe the last ladder match for the belts, you know, and that I think I could have done without a lot of the other stuff. It didn't really enhance anything in retrospect, you know. But yeah, from a wrestling perspective, I thought the guys were busting their asses. They were trying hard, and I didn't see too many guys dogging it or going through the motions or whatever, you know. So I guess that's to their credit, you know. And I've been wondering if it's just me or whatever, but it seems to me they're having a pay-per-view about every two or three weeks now, which is, I don't know, for me that's risky business, you know. It seems like you're almost going to the well too often, you know. And, you know, I think one of the problems is bad enough to have, you know, back in the day you had maybe four pay-per-views a year, you know, maybe WrestleMania and SummerSlam and Survivor Series and maybe Royal Rumble or something like that. But they're going, to me, they're having too many pay-per-views, and there's not a hell of a lot separating one from the other. It's the same cast of characters, you know. I'm not sure what, you know, what they're going to pull out of the hat at SummerSlam that they haven't already pulled out of the hat tonight or 3 weeks ago or at the Battlegrounds. Or so, for me, that's risky business where you're doing that, or the only alternative is when you bring back some kind of blast from the past, which seems to be all they do at WrestleMania. Maybe they bring back The Rock or Shawn Michaels or Mick Foley or one of those guys to kind of augment the same old crew that you see on Raw and SmackDown every week, you know, and all that other. So I'm not sure. I think there's some screaming need for some dynamic new talent. I hope they maybe have a few guys that can step up and become the next Undertaker or the next, you know, Shawn Michaels or Dwayne Johnson or whatever, you know. I'm not sure if that's the case, though. You know, some of the guys that have kind of stepped up to the plate in the last year or two seem to have dropped out of sight. You know, I've seen a number of them that kind of get a half push, and then the next thing I know, they're seemingly out of sight, you know. And it's kind of, I'll be interested to see how they replace, or, you know, what they're going to do to fill the pretty big void with CM Punk and Daniel Bryan. And they put a hell of a lot of eggs in those baskets and those two guys. And if you know, I've been hearing that Daniel's going to be out long term. I don't know if that's true, but that's the I've been hearing that from a lot of people that are supposedly on the inside, that Daniel's going to be out long term or maybe finished. You know, so I don't know. But he was a huge component, you know. And so it'll be interesting to see if, my own Pinion is it seen as, even though he's sort of like the face of the franchise and all, I think at some point seen as biggest attraction is when they finally turn him out and out heel. You know, I don't know whether he, for me, his popularity peaked about 3-4 years ago, and it's been kind of, you know, stuck in that position since. You know, I haven't really discerned him to have as much appeal as Daniel Bryan had, or even CM Punk when he was getting the push about a year or so ago. You know, so I don't know. What's your take on some of that?
Well, Daniel Bryan, you know, even though he's going to be out for a while, you know, he was, to me, he was at the WrestleMania 30 when he won the title. That was like an awesome moment. And you're thinking that maybe this is the next top guy, especially the way they build him and especially how the WrestleMania scene went when he beat Triple H. He beat Batista. He beat Randy Orton. But these injuries just played up on him. And it caused, it was a couple things behind the scenes. I think that kind of ruined the whole run. It was more about him getting married, that his father passed away, then he had surgery. So he never got the steam of a champion to go forward, and it kind of slowed him down. And that's a shame, especially after the moment of him winning WrestleMania, which was a great moment to watch.
I thought that was kind of a real etched in time, you know, and it was really special occasions, and I agree. I totally don't think that he even came close to his potential after he won the belt. It's almost like I guess it's just one of those things with the injury, and I don't know, and I'm not sure what happened with Punk, you know, whether nobody seems to quite know what the deal is there, other than the fact that he's out of the picture and apparently not coming back, so.
Yeah, I mean, Punk, it seems like he's not anywhere near the scene anymore. I mean, he was, if the only time I would expect him to come back was WrestleMania, but I just don't think they want to deal with him, and I think they're more interested in growing the new talent, like a Roman Reigns, like a Seth Rollins, like Bray Wyatt. They're interested in bringing those performance center guys up to the roster and having these younger guys. They got to start making a name for themselves, or else WWE's going to be in some trouble building some talent. And, you know, that's where they got to start focusing on, is getting some of those older guys kind of out of the picture and trying to get these guys, the newer guys, over with the audience, which is working in some, you know, at some point, but they need to get them larger than life, bigger. Like, if they could go on shows, they could be a Bret Hart, they could be a Hulk Hogan, they could be a Stone Cold, where they're just larger than life people. And that's where they're struggling, or they're going to attempt to do now. And that's why a guy like Cesaro and, you know, Reigns and Bray Wyatt were in this match, because those guys were in with veterans like John Cena, like Kane, you know, like Randy Orton. So they're getting some of the newer guys involved in these matches, which I think is significant to get them going to the next level. But one thing I wanted to talk about with you was Money in the Bank. It's so funny that we're talking about Money in the Bank, because the innovation of the ladder match started with Stampede Wrestling. And that I remember strictly from watching Bret Hart's DVD when that came out. But you were a part of that Stampede Wrestling back in the day of when the ladder match came about. Do you recall who just decided to come up with that concept, because it had never been done before?
Yeah, I was just kind of breaking in around that time, but we had a guy up here who was pretty, he had some pretty interesting concepts. You may have heard of him. His name was Dan Crawford. And I remember, I was just sort of breaking in around that time, but I remember him discussing it with him way back when. This is back in the 70s, and then he initially came up with this kind of concept where there was this heel we had up here, and he was kind of on the downside, you know. He'd been almost kind of, reminded me a bit of Kane, I guess, where he was kind of had been kind of chewed up and spit out, and then his name was Tor Kamata, and Crawford came up with this idea where they were going to climb the ladder, and initially it was they were going to have, I think, $10,000 or some bag of money up at the top, and Crawford claimed if he got to the bag of money, he was going to throw it all out into the audience and give it to the crowd, and Kamata, of course, was going to keep it. And that was the first ladder matches back in the 70s, but it came out of Stampede, and later on, maybe in the late 80s, I know my brother Brett took a lot of the ideas. Another one that I had started up here was the triple threat matches. I initially had done that with Dynamite Kid, who was a heel, and Davey Boy, and this one other Japanese guy called the Cobra, Georgie Takano, and we originally called them Bermuda Triangle matches, and that was another match that became kind of a hot item in WWE. That was a Calgary match all the way. And I've seen a few others that were sort of Calgary based matches that kind of came out of you know, that became pretty popular in WWE. And so I guess there's an old saying, imitation is the most sincere form of flattery. So I guess they're flattering us by using some of those matches that came out of Calgary. One of the problems I have, though, with WWE and just the so-called stipulation matches or whatever is, anytime you have one of those matches, there should be a very, you know, kind of discernible pretext or prevailing rationale for having those matches. You don't just have them for the hell of it. And that's one of the problems I find with WWE is all too often they're having ladder matches or tables, ladders, chairs, or they're having extreme rules matches, when there's no prevailing reason, or there's no lead-up or, you know, penultimate climax that they build up to. And that almost, for me, defeats the whole purpose, you know, and then it becomes what we used to call hot-shotting. And you have to be fairly judicious when you're having so-called stipulation or gimmick matches, because if you go to the well too often, then they cease to have any great appeal after a while. So I would say by that token, if you know, I wouldn't want to see another ladder match for a hell of a long time in the WWE. You know, they almost kind of exhausted the appetite for that, or overdid the thing tonight, you know. So I sure as hell wouldn't want to be seeing a ladder match for the belt or something to get a SummerSlam or some such thing, you know, and hopefully they, you know, will choose to not go to the well too often, although all too often they seem to disregard any of that and, you know, keep flogging the dead horse or whatever, but...
Well, I mean, one thing about the ladder match is I think the ladder match in the Attitude Era was happening more often than I think it does today, because we kind of are used to it now once a year, where they use the concept of the ladder match pretty much only for the Money in the Bank reasons, because I think Money in the Bank is an interesting concept where a cash in of a briefcase can happen any time. And I think that concept of it is interesting. But I think in the Attitude Era, they used to have TLC matches all the time. They had two in 1 year, you know, and it was just like they had it so many times. But then again, it was so new to us to have a triple threat ladder match or a TLC match. You know, they were having those all the time, You know, and they all, obviously they have a TLC match this year, so probably twice a year we get to see a ladder match involved. But, I mean, what's your concept, the concept of Money in the Bank? Do you like the idea of just having the concept of a briefcase for a title opportunity? I know you've had, in Stampede, you've had money, titles. There have been many different reasons to have a match, but what's your favorite one? Do you like having the Money in the Bank concept, a championship concept, or what are your thoughts on that?
I think the ends always have to justify the means, you know. And so, for me, the Money in the Bank things, I'm not a huge fan of it at all. I think, frankly, it's almost an invitation to a swerve I've seen all too often, way too many times. And for me, it's complete horseshit where you have a guy win the Money in the Bank and he can cash it in at any time. And so you have two guys who are engaged in a ass-kicking, you know, beating the crap out of each other, bloodbath, or you know, and then at any given time, you know, some heel or whoever the hell can come out and have Money in the Bank. Like, if I had some horseshit like that in, say, the World Cup of Soccer today, where I was watching Greece and Costa Rica, and then just say Bangladesh or some country had won Money in the Bank World Cup or something, and they came out and, you know, kicked a goal in after these guys have been busting their balls for 2 hours straight in the heat, and these guys come running out and kick a goal. And for me, it would be a complete effing abomination, you know. But I've seen that type of crap at with these Money in the Bank things, where some guy can come in and cash in any. And I think sometimes the bookers or the script writers in WWE think they're, you know, almost too clever or too cute with some of that bullshit. But for me, I can see the point of having the so-called Money in the Bank, but, you know, correct me if I'm wrong. To me, it's complete bullshit where somebody can just come in at any given time after guys maybe, you know, as I said before, been through a, you know, an exhausting, grueling struggle and finally wins the belt or whatever and overcomes, and then, you know, some guy who's, you know, not done anything all night and is fresh and, you know, just gets to come out and I want to cash in my Money in the Bank and fight you now, even though you got a broken arm and you're exhausted and, you know, fucked and all like that, you know. Okay, get it, you know. What's your take on that?
I think it's best when heels have it, only because that's the kind of move that a heel would do. They would never plan ahead and tell them they're going to cash in Money in the Bank. And
oh, yeah, I'm sure that's
week.
Probably what's going to happen with Seth maybe now. Is going to,
yeah.
You know, they'll have
that's
some,
a,
hopefully they'll not contrive it too much or whatever. But for me, it would be, yeah, I'm not a huge, you know, I'm not a huge Cena fan in that respect, but I sure it's, you know, it would piss me off if I saw Cena maybe having a titanic, you know, kind of struggle with Kane or some damn thing, or, you know, Randy Orton or whatever, and finally emerges after 40, 50-minute grueling struggle, and then have Seth Rollins and Stephanie swagger off to the ring, and we're going to cash the Money in the Bank now, you know. Or, you know, I'm almost expecting something like that, but for me, it's I really have to be careful when you're pissing off the fans. You know, there's a certain way to get heat. You know, I found that in Stampede, but if you get cheap heat or you get heat that just kind of either, you know, offends people's intelligence or just you know, doesn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense, then I think you turn the people off and it, you know, potentially compromises your ability to draw money. So I don't know. I think one of the problems they got in WWE is you got too many cooks in the kitchen, you know. It seems to be kind of evident all the time. Like, as I said before, they had like three or four horseshit comic relief things tonight with the Divas and Damian and, you know, the Bella Twins getting accosted by Stephanie and then Risho and the Vicky and Stephanie mud wrestling fiasco and then having Summer Rae and Layla and Fandango having their menage a trois and all that other bullshit. You know, it's almost like, you know, maybe one little bit of comic relief. You know, it's almost saying, where's Santino when we need him? You know, maybe he can bring the gobbledygooker or maybe, you know, Great Kelly to come out and inflict himself on us again or something, you know. But yeah, I don't know, you know, I know if I was booking, you know, that's what tells me there's too many cooks in the kitchen, because I think if one person that was, say, orchestrating that last match, you know, went to all the trouble to, you know, come up with all the schematics for that, you know, I'd be pissed off if I was sort of the guy who orchestrated that match and found out that somebody else had orchestrated all these, you know, limp dick comic relief things that were on there. You know, I don't think that adds to anything, you know, but it tells me that there's, you know, certainly not, you know, clarity. You know, if you're having a great movie, like a real serious movie, Citizen Kane or something like that, then you got Pee Wee Herman putting in a cameo appearance and maybe, you know, Curly Larry and Moe showing up out of nowhere and bullshit like that. You know, I don't think Orson Welles would be saying, great, you know, let's see if we can get a cameo appearance of Dumb and Dumber as well, you know, or some shit like that, you know. But maybe I'm too old school or whatever, you know, but I don't know, you know. I seem to almost have that same, you know, kind of somewhat cynical perspective every time I see almost any pay-per-view, and I've been actually on a few, and I know they got way too many script writers and people trying to get their two bits worth in, and I think that's part of their problem right now. You know, they got too many cooks in the kitchen. You know, you got a guy who's coaching the damn Super Bowl team, and ultimately he kind of calls the shot, Bill Belichick or whatever the hell, but if he's got four or five other people that have just as much, you know, say, that are calling trick plays and wanting to include the cheerleaders and the halftime show and all that other stuff, you know, I think you start losing your focus. That's, you know, something I see all the time. It's a testimony to the inherent popularity of the wrestling business that it keeps kind of surviving and, you know, remaining reasonably popular in spite of all the horseshit. But, I think that there's no two ways about it. There's still a proliferation of crap that, need not be on there. And, somebody should be standing back and kind of taking another look at it instead of endorsing it or allowing the crap to detract from the good. But that's just my perspective, you know, maybe from having been a booker and having been around a territory where we took a lot of pride in the work that we were doing and, you know, the storylines and the angles and whatnot we were shooting, you know. And I know I'd be pissed if I was orchestrating, and I had some pretty serious workers and pretty serious storylines up here with Dynamite and Davey and Brett and Schultz and Bad News and guys like that. But if somebody had just inflicted on me some, kind of non-related comedy or farce or bullshit, I know I would have been pissed. I'd say, what the hell has this got to do with what we're trying to get over with Brett and Dynamite or Owen and Bad News or some of that, and that's just my perspective, maybe from having been a booker. And, I know we used to go to great lengths to fine-tune and come up with some serious ass-kicking stuff that was, intended to really hook the people and elicit a pronounced reaction, and if I saw some crap like, the Damian Sandow wearing a Paul Revere wig or some bullshit like that and coming out and, if I was an ear hunter, I'd be standing back. Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't know whether the guy's perpetrating that or not, but I'd be saying, what the hell's this got to do with anything else? It doesn't add anything. It doesn't, kind of set the table for the next thing we're trying to do or anything else. It's just sort of like lame filler, and I think that's part of their problem. There's way too much of that crap. But what's your take on it, Will?
Well, I think there were some matches on there, and when we go through them kind of one by one, we could determine that, hey, this match was like, more of a filler. And they had a lot of filler on the show where I think two matches could have been cut out. And I think, sometimes less is more on a show, especially when they had more time and they had more meaning to something. And we can look at those going through it. But one of my favorite things was the opening match, which really got the crowd hot. The Usos and the Wyatt family tag team match. They've been trying to get the tag team division over again as a big thing, and the Usos have been a prime, way of getting that tag team over. What are your thoughts on that match? Because I actually really enjoyed that match a lot.
I actually thought it was a good opening match, and I thought they busted their asses. That's one of the problems. I don't like to always sound like I'm criticizing, but in the old days, a prelim match would just sort of be just that, sort of set the table. But these guys all want to seem to, do so damn many 2 9/10, the near three count and pins and all that. And so I thought those guys really worked hard and put in a hell of an effort. I thought there was far too many false finishes, so as we used to call them, and certainly for an opening match, I'm not sure if you ever used to attend wrestling matches back in the day, the opening matches or the prelims, as we used to call them, they're sort of like the cartoon or the short shorts you'd watch at the movie, it's sort of all they're really designed to do is, kind of whet your appetite a bit, kind of get you into the mood a bit, but they certainly weren't designed to detract. It's like the opening. If you got the opening act, it's quite often the concert, you got a opening act. They're not supposed to try to steal the show from the main guys. But so I thought the Wyatts and Harper and Rowan and the Usos, I thought they really worked hard. And, if nothing else, they were pretty serious, and, finish was in the middle, so it, to their credit for that. And, I thought it went a bit longer than it needed to, but, I'd certainly give it a solid grade. I thought it was a pretty damn respectable match, and I'd give props to all four of those guys. They worked pretty hard, and there wasn't too much excessive artificial additives. You didn't see too many chairs and gimmicks being pulled out from under the ring, and you didn't see too much other bullshit where they went through the Spanish timekeeper's table or had a diva you know, flashing her tits or any other bullshit, you know. So, but yeah, I thought that was a decent match. The second one was all right. I thought they worked hard, you know, all things considered. That's the Divas title match with, I guess, Paige and Naomi or whatever.
Naomi.
I thought they were all right. I frankly was distracted, or and I didn't know what the point of the other girl being out there with the pouting look on her face doing nothing, you know. It didn't seem to serve any purpose other than kind of distract you, you know. But I thought they worked all right, you know. And, you know, that would have been for me fine just to have that one girls match, you know. Later on, they had the other one that almost did the Fandango. Yeah, but I thought it was all right, you know. If nothing else, it was shortened to the point, and there wasn't too much
That was like the best part. There was actually some wrestling going on, because usually with Divas, we're not like open to some real wrestling, kind of like what we saw in the second match, but in the first one, you know, Paige is, you know, from England. She's a very good submission wrestler. Naomi's kind of building herself up to be very athletic in the ring as far as what she could do. And, you know, it was funny because I remember watching the opening. They basically tied up, and they just kept tying up, and they even went to the outside and still were in that wrestling stance of gripping each other, which, you know, you don't see that too often, which I those little things, like, I took away from them where they kept locking up and just would not let go locking up, which I thought is something like kind of a missed art, you know, sometimes in wrestling, because that's always a fun thing to watch where it's a struggle. And I like the idea of having a struggle between these two people.
Yeah, I thought, you know, for me, the women's wrestling, you know, Divas, or whatever the hell they call it these days, for me, it's been on a downhill slide for a long time. You know, to me, it was just sort of glorified strippers and kind of a flimsy vehicle to, you know, kind of showcase some TNA, you know, and all like that. But I thought it was better than a lot of the Divas matches I've seen in a while, you know, and certainly better than AJ and some of that stuff that I was seeing not that long ago, you know. And I think they should maybe leave the belt on Paige for a while, let her get established. You know, she, I think, seems to be, you know, fairly credible, and you know, she mostly wrestles. You know, she's not bad looking, but she doesn't look like she's just sort of being a sexploitation object or anything like that. So, but yeah, I think overall the whole Divas division is, for me, there's not too many Divas that can work out there right now. I'm not even sure, frankly, if you need to have Divas every night either. You know, back in the days of the territories, you'd bring Divas and midgets in maybe once a year, and that was about all you needed. You know, people would get their fix. You know, I've never been a huge fan of having the girls on every damn night, and they're sort of a novelty act, you know, but if you have them on every show, I don't know, they almost kind of cease to be a viable attraction, you know. It's kind of like, okay, you know. So, but anyway, I thought it was all right. I'd give it about a 3 out of 5, that Divas match. It was about all you could expect from them, you know, and they didn't detract from the rest of the card, so that's the best thing I could say about them.
Yeah, I would agree with that. We have a caller on the line, so we're going to get to that caller right now. Let's bring in 706 area code. You are now on the air with PWP Radio for the Money in the Bank recap. What's your name?
Hey, TLD, it's me, Toph. Been a while.
Hey, Toph, welcome to the show, my man. I'm sorry, I forgot your number. Welcome, Toph, here back on the air with us, Bruce. Toph's always a good friend.
Yo.
Oh, hey, Bruce. Yeah, I helped Bruce out the other day. Didn't we review Payback, Bruce?
Yeah.
I think Yeah, I believe Toph joined you on Payback. I wasn't around for that one. I was in Greece at the time, so I couldn't join you for that show. But, Toph,
yeah,
welcome back to your time. Yeah, Bruce.
Yo, what was the question again? My connection wasn't great.
Oh, Bruce, basically, Toph just asked that you were on the air with Toph for the Payback pre-show last time, so that's what Toph was trying to bring it up.
Yeah. And was there a question? Right, I wasn't sure.
Oh, no
really
question. I was just calling in.
Yeah, more of a statement.
Yeah.
Toph, we talked about the tag team match and the Divas match. What were your thoughts on those two, Toph?
Oh, the opening matches were good. The tag team match was good, and I was a big fan of that. I was expecting the Usos to go over, and they did.
I thought it was a good opener.
Yeah, it was definitely a good opener. I think they went outside the box this year because, you know, normally they have the Money in the Bank open, so they had the tag team match open. So when I saw that, I knew the pay-per-view was going to be a little different. The Divas match was good. I wish they could have put more focus. Like, I would prefer Paige and Naomi to just go out there and work for 10 minutes, but, you know, they kept focusing on Cameron and the commentators and stuff like that. But, you know, it was a good match. And
Yeah, like I said, I didn't see what the other Diva was out there for. You know, the other didn't seem to serve any purpose other than to kind of distract you, and I guess you're waiting for her to ambush somebody or do something. But I think it would have been better if she had just stayed in the dressing room. She didn't really add anything to anything other than just kind of, it was almost kind of an obstruction. But what was your take on that third match?
Yeah, I'm mostly happy that they were able to perform early in the show, because in previous pay-per-views they have, you know, Paige or whoever the Divas champion is go out there, you know, second to last match, and the crowd just sort of dies. So they didn't do that tonight, and that's good.
Yep. The third match, though, that was something kind of out of left field. Adam Rose against Damian Sandow. Coach, what were your thoughts on that?
There is a lot of filler on this pay-per-view. I'm not a fan of that. And I have no disrespect to the wrestlers. I know Jay, apparently he doesn't like it when people use the word, but I call it like I see it, man. And, you know, when you have pay-per-views like Money in the Bank, see, it's not like this is a regular B-show pay-per-view. Money in the Bank is a big pay-per-view, at least I think it is. And you have the matches that are advertised. You know, we all know the matches that are advertised, and then there's the matches that are just not advertised at all. And then you have matches that you've seen on Raw and SmackDown, and you just randomly put it out here. We know what it is. You're an intelligent wrestling fan, TLD, and I know you're an intelligent wrestling fan, Bruce. We all know what it is. It's when you don't have a strong card. So what you do is you just get two random people, and you have them go out there and kill time. You know, that's all it is. It's just being honest. Yes, they're entertaining us.
Sure.
They're putting their bodies on the line, but it's still filler. It's filler. If I want to see filler, I'll see that on Raw. If I want to see filler, I'll see it on SmackDown. I don't expect to see that on pay-per-view when you pay money for it. The match was fine, but it was filler. This pay-per-view had a lot of filler on it. That's just how it is.
That said, you know, if that had maybe been the only filler match on it, I would have said, okay, fine, you know, I guess they needed the one. But there was all kinds of other filler on the card, too, that, you know, just kind of almost started becoming an annoyance after a while. But I thought they took way too long. Like, would have been, you know, bad enough just to have Damian and Adam Rose have their quick little match and get it the hell over with and get them out of there. But they wasted all kinds of time before the match with Damian coming out and insulting the people of Boston, that cheesy stuff about Paul Revere, and he would have, you know, not made his ride. And then they had Adam Rose come out with his entourage and all that nonsense, which it seemed to be about 10 more minutes of filler before they had the actual match. And then the match itself was kind of a laughable, you know, kind of pointless farce that didn't do anything for me. The work rate sucked, and the match was kind of lame, and the finish was contrived and all like that, you know. So even so, I would have been fine if that was the only one, but it seemed like they needed to inflict more filler on us throughout the card, you know, which I guess we'll get to in a bit, you know. But,
I do like Damien, though. I think he does, even though, you know, he's not in the best position, you know, whatever he goes out and, you know, attempts to portray, he does a good job being funny, you know, so... Kind of reminds me of Chris Kane in WCW. You know, gave him a bad gimmick, but he's trying to make the best of it. You know, he makes me laugh every time. Just wish he was doing something better.
Yeah, I've been. That seems to be the common scuttlebutt in the business these days. Is what did Damien do to piss somebody off? Or he seems to have become reduced to, you know, kind of this kind of almost demeaning. You know, I guess. Now that they've let go of Heath Slater and Jinder Mahal and Drew McIntyre and maybe downgraded Santino, they've turned Damien into this kind of laughingstock or whatever. But I thought he was a decent enough worker about a year or so ago. I thought he was, you know, starting to make some strides. Instead, they kind of have him now... you know, kind of like a buffoon every night wearing, you know, it doesn't add to anything. Paul Revere and all these.
Well, let's go. No, we're going to keep going forward because the next match, but before I get there, I believe we have Bobby on the line. Bobby, is this you?
Yes, it is, Will. How's it going, guys? Good to be on the show again.
Hey, Bobby, welcome to the show.
Yeah, how are you, Bobby? What's shaking, Bobby?
I'm just hanging in there, Bruce. I just wanted to call in and offer up a quick question to Bruce and the rest of the guys on the show. Just really to see what everybody's perspective was on a little tidbit in the first Money in the Bank ladder match for the Money in the Bank briefcase. The whole thing when they had with Ambrose falling and the supposed injury and then he taking him to the back. And then the whole thing with Seth Rollins and Ambrose on the ladder. I just want to ask Bruce, what did you think with the whole thing with him taking his sweet time and then the whole thing with Kane running down, making the save for Seth Rollins?
Yeah, I was appreciative of the work ethic in that match, but as seems to all too often be the case in these ladder matches, he almost got to the point where you didn't even take it seriously. Every time somebody started climbing the ladder, you already knew that somebody was going to knock him off because, you know, and for me it was really the whole thing I found hard to digest and it made no sense where when Dean Ambrose is, you know, supposedly injured his shoulder, and they have these lame security guards or paramedics or whatever, like, ordered him out of the ring, you know, like, which to me was complete crap. And then he came back later, and then, you know, they're near the top of the ladder. And for me, it was insulting to my intelligence where Kane, they made, you know, I don't know that he's too, you know, sluggish or injury prone or whatever, that he was moving like kind of an arthritic elephant down the ramp, and they're all waiting, you know. And the whole thing I found was way too damn long and drawn out, and, you know, when somebody just grabbed the damn belt, instead they takes Kane 5 minutes to make it to the ring, and then, you know, the whole thing didn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense, you know. And you know, I'm glad to see Seth Rollins finally win it, just if only because, you know, I think he might be one of the few guys that he can get any real heat out of right now. But aside from that, I thought it was way too much excess. And as I said before, you know, it was way too much excess to have two damn ladder matches. And bad enough to have one on... you know, but the first one for me detracted from the second one. You know, like, you don't need to have two damn battle royals or two cage matches or some such thing, you know, and two divas matches as well, I might add, which they also had tonight, you know. And then they got another pay-per-view in 3 weeks, you know. It's like, why the hell didn't they just save the Money in the Bank ladder match for that card, or, you know, the one of the Divas matches for that card or whatever, you know, because there's not a hell of a lot else on that other card by the sounds of it. They'll flog something for the next 3 weeks on Raw and SmackDown to make out like, you know, it's leading up to, you know, the next pay-per-view. But for me, I just thought it was too much overkill. And most of the guys, not to knock them, I feel sorry for the poor bastards. But aside from Seth Rollins and maybe Dean Ambrose, most of the other guys have been reduced to jobber status. So nobody, I don't believe anyone was expecting Jack Swagger or Kofi or any of those guys to win the match anyway. You know, you almost kind of knew that they were kind of, you know, just in there to fill out the so-called roster, you know. But what's your perspective of it, Will?
Well, as far as the athletic ability of all those guys, it's amazing sometimes the concepts of what these guys come up with. Just the fact that Kofi got pushed off a ladder, landed on the ropes and jumped to the outside was just a really cool, like, scene in that match. You know, they gave each guy kind of their spots, but definitely the focus was on Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose as far as that story goes. They really, I thought it was smart how they put Dean Ambrose in the match to begin with, and just having those two go at it. And, of course, they used the whole shoulder send to the back. You kind of knew he was going to come back out. But just him using the chair on Seth after what obviously happened to Dean when he got hit with the chair multiple times by Rollins, it was kind of like, you know, foreshadowing that. So it was good to see that point. And then, of course, the screw job at the end with Kane, basically screwing Ambrose out of the chance to be Money in the Bank. And Rollins was definitely the obvious winner. You know, all the other guys were definitely fillers. And, you know, I thought Van Damme did a great job. Swagger looked good. Ziggler looked good. It was a shame that Bad News Bears
would be
a part of that
match. Some of them took some unbelievable bumps. I was, you know, actually impressed with, you know, guys like Van Damme, Swagger, and Kofi. You know, they really busted their asses, and Dolph as well. You know, almost, you know, as I said before, almost too many and dangerous spots too, the kind of spots that cause injuries. They're taking a lot of, you know, back bumps and backdrops and some of that stuff on top of ladders. Good way to break your ribs or mess yourself up, you know. So I think they're earning their money for sure, you know, but almost to the point where I thought it was a bit too dangerous for them, you know. But I give them credit for going out and doing it, you know. I would have.
That's not an easy
I still think
to
it would have been better
to
save it for the next pay-per-view.
Well, yeah, it's hard to say what Battleground's going to be about, but just because it turned the concept of Money in the Bank into a pay-per-view, people really seem to look really forward to this show more often than probably other shows. So, what were your thoughts on this match and how the outcome went?
I like this match. The traditional Money in the Bank match is always my favorite match of the year in WWE. Going into it, it was a given that Seth Rollins was going to win, but I appreciate the screw job at the end because it's not as obvious. You know, we all thought Seth was going to win clean. Putting Ambrose in the match made sense because, you know, Rollins was afraid that Ambrose was going to screw him over, so he wanted Ambrose in a controlled environment. And for the most part, the majority of Ambrose's offense was on Rollins. I mean, there is the occasional offensive spot he did on some other guys, but it was mostly 90% Rollins. And if you notice, for most of the match, it was really Rollins just trying to get away from Ambrose. So I appreciate a story within a story. It sucks for Bad News Barrett, injured again, right around Money in the Bank again. Seems to have an Ahmed Johnson curse there. I like the false finish with Kofi. even though I knew Kofi wasn't going to win, but when they had that false finish where it seemed like Kofi was going to win and the fans went crazy, that was cool. I'm a big fan of false finishes. You always want to make it feel like anybody can win, even if you know they can't win. That was cool. Even Swagger looked good, and I don't even like Swagger like that. He put work in. Ziggler looked good. Everyone looked good. Everyone in the match did their job and sold the story of the match. And, you know, in the end, Seth Rollins wins, and, you know, he won Money in the Bank. So this was definitely a good match. It delivered. And I knew going into it that there's no way the world title match would be anywhere close to that. So I agree with Bruce that when you have two of the same matches, it kind of takes away from whatever the second match is going to be. So, yeah, but this was definitely a good match. It was match of the night for me. And pretty much after this match, the card just went downhill. I liked the first half of the pay-per-view, but the second half, it went downhill after this match. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, I mean, the entertainment factor of it got a little different. I could definitely see that the suplex off the top rope was pretty insane. Off the top of the wire was pretty insane for me. Bobby, what was your take on that match for the Money in the Bank?
Well, just kind of like the point of view that Bruce is saying, just like, well, after being a wrestler and just like the appreciation of the bumps and stuff, like you just said, the taking the suplex off the ladder was just insane. Also, when Rollins was up there with Kofi and he went for the sunset and Kofi just stayed there and he just basically took the front bump onto the ladder. And the scary part was the ladder fell out and he almost landed, hit the back of his head on the bottom side of the other ladder, which was just crazy. And just like with Kofi, the athleticism that he did to just jump and maintain his balance on the rope, which is actually not that easy to do. And
I totally agree, Bobby. I think, you know, it's way too much almost inviting injury. And, you know, hopefully nobody got seriously injured. But I saw a number of times tonight where guys kind of, you know, broken their necks or sustained some really serious injuries from just landing on the edge of a ladder or, you know, some of the bumps that they took where the ladder went one way and they went flying over the top. And, you know, way too much needless, you know, kind of invitation to disaster, you know. So, you know, I don't like to be harping on the same thing, but it was horseshit like that cost my brother Owen his life. And I don't like to see that much disregard for life and limb, you know. The bottom line is I don't think you need to have that much of that kind of excessive hot-shotting or holy shit type stuff or whatever the hell, you know. Nobody should lose sight of the fact that it's supposed to be effing wrestling, not stunt fest or, you know, Cirque du Soleil or, you know, Evil Knievel or the great Melinda walking on a tightrope or some crap. It's not supposed to be that, you know, and I think they need to remember that because if somebody had broken his neck or, you know, sustained some, you know, serious injury from one of those spots and there was enough of them on the card tonight, then everybody would be running around right now saying they got to cut back, you know. Just the fact that nobody got hurt should not, you know, kind of, you know, make people think that they're, you know, being safe or having, you know, care about people's health and welfare, because I don't think that's the case, and I think they got to cut back on that and get away, you know, from what we used to call it hot-shotting, but I think there's way too much of that. You know, I feel sorry for some of the poor bastard wrestlers, you know, and, you know, it's way too much needless, you know, invitation to injury out there, and, you know, I hope maybe they hear what the hell I'm saying, because you don't need another, broken neck or fatality in the ring, you know, and they're, you know, is, you know, that's just my opinion. But
well, anyway, you know, this is one of the pay-per-views that can really, you know, it doesn't happen too often, but this is one of the shows where it's definitely a dangerous outcome, and you have to trust the other people in the ring. And that's the key to this, is trusting the other person to catch you. Trust the other person to make sure you're doing the suplex right, because injuries can occur. Wade Barrett got hurt from a simple match, and this is a much, much more dangerous match, and they have more risk of injury.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing they don't have as many injuries as often as I think they do in these matches. So I'm actually kind of impressed that they're able to protect themselves as much as they can. You know, poor Wade Barrett, on the other hand, didn't get that. But I got to ask you, Bruce, I don't know, did you watch the pre-show beforehand?
I never did. What was on that?
Well, the main thing was that Daniel Bryan came out and basically talked about what's going on in his injury and his as far as career goes. So he gave a little speech, but was interrupted by Bo Dallas. So I have to ask you, Bruce, are you a Bo Dallas?
Oh, yeah, I saw that. When I was, you know, they had that later on in the show that I was watching, you know. I didn't know that it was a pre-show, but... Yeah, I thought that whole thing was, you know, lame as well. You know, they, like when I the show that I watched, they had it after the Rusev and Big E Langston thing. So that was, but yeah, I don't know what the point of that was. You know, like it's not like they're shooting an angle for Daniel to fight Bo Dallas, so there was no. There was no real need for me to see some bullshit about Bo leave as and leave the ring or something like that. And then, you know, maybe you guys can fill me in if there was some discernible rationale or pretext for it. But didn't make me want to see Bo Dallas fight Daniel, or didn't seem like it was anything other than filler. And you know, there was already more than enough filler on the show tonight. So, you know, that's my take on that. But what is your take?
Well, I'll let Toph fill in and see what he thinks about it, Toph. Toph, what was your thoughts on that? Bo Dallas coming out during Daniel Bryan's promo about what's going on with him.
I thought it was funny. I thought it was humorous. I think the Bo Dallas gimmick is pretty funny. At first, I thought it was kind of lame, but after a while, NXT work and looked at his NXT work, and then I reevaluated and I was like, oh, okay, I get it. So I think that segment's probably planting the seeds for a future feud down the road, you know, when Bryan comes back, maybe not for a title or anything, but it was humorous and, you know, just it's a good rub on Bo just to be in the same ring as Bryan. So, you know, you know, someone's always got to interrupt, you know, the baby face when he's cutting a promo. So, you know,
right.
Bo was humorous.
What was
his
that
job?
What was that line? What was that line used about the neck again? I forgot what he said about it.
What, Bo's line?
Yeah, he said a line about Daniel Bryan's neck or his head or something like that. Or you know,
I think
you
he said
head in life.
Yeah, I think he said you got to look ahead in life, and if you believe, you can come back stronger than ever, or something like that. So
I
appreciate the puns.
Yeah,
I appreciate the puns with Bo. Because you got to have a really creative mind to just say stuff like that on the fly, you know, on live television with over, you know, 20,000 and more in the arena and more fans watching around the world. You know, it's pretty cool to talk like that on a regular basis and not mess up. So I can appreciate the gimmick of Bo Dallas. I'll give it a chance.
Okay. Bobby, your thoughts of that if you saw it?
I was watching with Bruce. I really only saw what he spoke about. But as far as Bo Dallas goes, I kind of actually like his gimmick. I think he's pretty funny. And on top of that, he's not a bad worker in his own right himself. And he, you know, he seems like a guy that I probably like working with. And I like what I'm seeing from the guy so far.
Yeah, I like it too. I think he's doing very well. I'm starting to rub off to me. I am becoming a believer, basically. So let's move forward up to the line. We have Goldust and Stardust against Rybacksel in a tag team match, another tag match on the show. Bruce, what's your thought on Stardust?
I think it's, you know, lame. You know, what's next? Are you going to have Dusty come out with you know, a Tinkerbell painted gold or some damn thing, you know, and call him you know, something like, I don't know what the hell, but I think the whole thing's lame. You know, I'm not sure what, you know, what the point of it all was. You know, the Ryback and Curtis, I guess, were trying hard, you know, but the whole thing for me was just more kind of flaccid comic relief, you know, and we'd already, you know, had our fill of, you know, the preceding match, which was comic relief and all like that. So I could have done without that match. It didn't really do anything for me. And the match was not great to start with. It was all right, you know, but just more of what we've been referring to for the last half hour, filler, you know. And I'm not too sold on this. I'm not sure what the deal is with Cody Rhodes. They've had through all these kind of lame personas for I don't know how long. He's doing the one where he's talking about men's grooming or how to pluck nose hairs out of your nose or some damn thing. And then he was through a little charade with Damien where they were kind of a, you know, some kind of the honor roll type thing. And then, you know, he had the falling out with Goldust, and now he's back at Stardust. And as I said before, I think there's many, you know, geniuses in the, you know, concocting these storylines that they all think they're reinventing the wheel or something like that. But I'm not sure what – I didn't have any great impressions of any of it. And for me, that whole match – you know, if it wasn't on the card tonight, nobody would have given a rat's ass, you know. What's your take on it, guys?
I think I'm looking at it as, you know, to give us something different for Cody to do. Not to take away from his athleticism. I think he's a great talent. Goldust obviously lost a lot. Got a lot of muscle tone. Looks a lot better in the ring. Runs better. So, again, this match, you could have done without it, but it still was a good match anyway. Tell us, what was your thought?
Pretty much what Bruce said. It was filler. Just a longer version of the match they had on Raw, doing something different for Cody. I don't really agree with the Stardust character, but apparently it's Cody's idea. So if it's Cody's idea, I'll have faith in him as a wrestler, because we always talk about how sometimes creative just isn't that good, but sometimes it's the wrestler's it's their responsibility to come up with creative ideas and provide input as well. So if Cody thinks it can work and get him over with his brother, you know, Dustin, Goldust, whatever, then, you know, more power to him. As a Cody Rhodes fan, I'll support him and hope it works out for him. So personally, I'm not a fan of the gimmick or the character. I think it's totally unnecessary, and I could just focus an entire podcast, really, on everything they've done wrong with Cody Rhodes. Of all the guys on the roster, he's really one of the most underutilized guys there, but that's beyond the point. The match itself was okay, just filler, nothing we haven't seen already. And I thought the best part of the match is you can see you so bad that Ryback wants to work babyface so many times. He just subconsciously does mm-hmm. the whole feed me more thing, and
yeah.
You can see he's trying to not do it, and the fans are starting to chant it with him. And I guess it's because it's been so long, and Ryback's just sort of been, you know, paired up with Axel for a while now. But you can just see it. Like I said, the listeners out there, just pay attention to Ryback's matches, and you can see so bad. He's subconsciously working a babyface style, and, like, he has to stop himself mid-match. Like, he was doing the little pump thing, and then he stopped himself and was like, oh, crap, like, he forgot he was a heel. So, you know, they need to go ahead and just turn him face again, because that Feed Me More thing, it was getting over. Kids loved it, and they seemingly ruined Ryback's momentum for no reason. But the match was okay. It was fine. They went out there. They worked hard. Match is good, but, you know, sorry, it was filler. Just being honest, calling it how it is.
Yeah, I would agree with that also. I thought it was interesting because finally Ryback and Curtis Axel actually wore singlets. One thing about them I like is that they don't look the same. They don't wear the same outfits
mm-hmm.
like the Usos. You know, so that's something they started doing, but I think they need to get more outfits together. I think that's one thing that could help them work as a team, because they look like individuals. Bobby, your thoughts on that tag match?
You know, just similar to what the two other gentlemen said. I really didn't even know that it was Cody's idea. I thought it was maybe some sort of a rib they were doing on him to make him some crazy tag team with Goldust. But yeah, man, if that was his idea, let him go do his thing and let him. You know, it's pretty funny when he sang, pulled out a song from Pinocchio and started singing "When You Wish Upon a Star" last Monday. But yeah, this.
that was fun. I gotta say, they gotta get more promo time.
Oh yeah,
they gotta get more promo time. I think that'll help get the character over even just a little bit more, because it pretty much Cody does look like he's more out there than Goldust does, which is something very hard to pull off with Goldust. But we're gonna move on to the next match.
Definitely win, especially when Goldust is going up. Now I'm the normal brother.
Yeah, that, exactly. See, and I'm. That was very entertaining with that segment. Moving forward, Rusev and Big E. So I have to say, this match was a lot better than I thought it would be, honestly. I think that the last time, Big E got killed, but this time, it almost looked like he was going to beat Rusev. Rusev got bloodied, he got weakened. I thought that this match was actually, this one was a lot better than I really thought it would have been. Bruce, what were your thoughts on this match?
I agree. It exceeded my expectations, although my expectations were not very much anyway. But it was actually a lot better than I expected. You know, they did a few nice moves. I thought when Big E speared Rusev through the ropes, it looked pretty good, you know. And I thought, you know, the spots, the high spots, and the, you know, the dynamic spots were pretty good. For me, there wasn't that much wrestling or that much holding it together. They didn't fill the gaps that well, you know, which is, you know, one of the weaknesses of both of them. You know, they're not that proficient at that type of thing. But I thought it was better than expected, but it still wasn't a great match. But given the limitations of both of them and all of that, you know, it was you know, a good solid C plus, I guess. You know,
yeah, I honestly think that those two guys, it was more like the big man's match. That's what it kind of felt like. It's just the two big guys just looking to fight each other. And the way they're building Rusev up, man, they're making him to a top heel in the company, which is, I think, a strong thing they need to have as a top heel. So what is your thoughts on this match between Big E? I mean, because you said this car went downhill, but I thought this match actually was pretty good compared to what I thought it would be.
Match is okay. The time they were given, you know, it was okay. I like the I always like it when there's a wrestling match and, you know, they do the whole, you know, so familiar with each other card, you know, like where Big E went for the spear, but then Rusev got out the way, and then Rusev went for the kick, and then Big E ducked. You know, when you wrestle each other before, you familiarize yourself with your opponent's moveset. So it was more physical. They had a little bit more time to work. And, you know, the match was, it was okay. It was better. I just think they could do more. Not necessarily with the match itself, but with the feud. You know, whenever I see, like, an anti-USA, you know, kind of storyline, I always go back to the Lex Express with Lex Luger and Yokozuna and, you know, all the marketing the stuff they did back, you know, when they gave Lex a bus and, you know, all that stuff. I'm not saying give Big E a bus. I'm just saying they could do so much more with him. I mean, you know, they give Rusev the star and the medal and the flag. Like, they give Rusev, you know, the Russian guy all this stuff, but, you know, nothing really, you know, to counter that, but, you know, it's okay. The match was, it was all right. Better than the payback match, so they worked hard.
That's for sure. Yeah, that's definitely for sure. I thought this match was a lot better than that payback match. You know, I thought Rusev looked weak tonight, which is, like, one of the first times we've seen him kind of, like, a little weaker than normal, and you can hear Lana just yelling at him, you know, so I thought that was very intriguing how they did that. Bobby, what were your thoughts on Big E against Rusev?
I thought it was an all right match. They both worked pretty hard, very hard tonight. And, you know, for what they can do in the ring, the one spot they did, the tackle spot to the outside, was pretty sick. And I'm just actually curious to see how the story plays out, if, like, they're going to continue with Rusev and Big E, like, see, or if they're going to find some other wrestler, pick some other wrestler to be the new Patriot. Because to be honest, I actually found a lot of humor in it that Big E Langston was supposed to be the USA guy, yet every night he goes out in Raw dressed like a Jamaican flag. So I'm actually curious to see how this plays out, or like, or if, who's going to be the new Patriot? Maybe Santino, or maybe you have Sandow be the new Patriot, dressed like a president every night. I don't know.
Well, and also it's funny because I think all of a sudden Big E has a Reverend Jesse Jackson accent now. Apparently,
I noticed. I picked that up in his promo last Monday in D.C.
Yeah. I don't know what that's about, but wrestling could be that simple, where you have a guy from the U.S., a guy from, you know, another country, and just collide them. And it's a simple concept. Bruce knows about that. They did the whole thing with U.S. and Canada back with the Hart Foundation, right, Bruce? I mean, that was the whole a simple thing.
Yeah, I think it's fairly simple. You know, they've played that card over and over way back when with Hogan and the Iron Sheik, and then Sergeant Slaughter and General Adnan during the Desert Storm thing, and then Lex had a little romp with Yoko. But for me, they've kind of got off to a lousy start with this Big E thing, because Big E wasn't, you know, for the longest time, I didn't even know that he was billed as an American, you know, and he was wearing, like as Bobby said, Jamaican colors, and Rusev was being billed for months as a Bulgarian for whatever reason. All of a sudden, because Putin pulled some crap in the Ukraine or something, all of a sudden they're changing his nationality, you know. For me, Rusev reminds me kind of a not particularly compelling cross between Nikolai Volkov and the Iron Sheik, you know, like he's got the Sheik's finish and, kind of got a bit of the buffoonish characteristics of Nikolai, you know, but I still don't take him all that seriously as a so-called contender. His manageress, you know, she probably does a better job than he does, you know. She's actually, you know, doing not a bad job, you know. I assume or, you know, anticipate she'll be maybe soon becoming a diva like all the other, you know. It seems to be a logical progression with these girls where they, kind of go the route of the Funkadactyls and AJ and all like that and evolve into women's champions, even though they seemingly have no wrestling background up to that point, you know. But hopefully that might be the case, you know. See what transpires, but I'd say the jury is still out on Rusev. You know, he hasn't done enough for me to take him as a really serious candidate, and he almost looks like it's just kind of a obvious kind of cheesy exploitation of the bit of the heat with Putin and Russia and Ukraine and all that stuff right now, but I'm not expecting it to materialize into anything great. I expect, you know, he may go the way of the great Khali and some of these other one-trick ponies. You know, I don't think he's going to be the next world champion or anything like that. I don't anticipate that.
Well, we'll see what's going forward, but the last match we'll talk about, we only have about 7 minutes left, so we're going to try to make this as quick as possible. Bruce, your thoughts on the last match and John Cena becoming the champion?
You forgot one other match I agree with you. It wasn't worth making mention of either, and that was at Layla and Summer Rae. As we were talking about before, I thought it was pretty decent match, all things considered. As I said before, you know, it would have been enhanced or would have been that much better if we hadn't had the other Money in the Bank ladder match already and all the other overkill beforehand that kind of, I think, took away from it a bit. But all that said, though, I thought it was pretty decent match. You know, there was a lot of pretty intense, hardcore stuff, you know. Seemed like everyone was really working hard and busting their asses, you know. I saw a lot of good spots, almost too many, you know. There's And that's one of the things you run the risk of in those ladder matches. I know we had a lot of them out here. You know, sometimes you almost tease them too much where you have, you know, I don't know how many dozen times during the match you got the guy, you know, on the verge of he's up climbing up the ladder and, you know, gets knocked off. It almost becomes a bit too much. But even so, I thought everyone, I'd give everyone pretty high marks for their effort in that match, and they were doing some pretty compelling spots. And those aren't easy matches to unload. You know, they're kind of like you know, cross between a battle royal and you know, a regular match. So, but I thought it was pretty damn good, and I thought it made perfect sense. You know, that Cena went over. You know, obviously, yeah. I think the seems like to set up something with Seth Rollins and, you know, Stephanie and Hunter and all like that. So all things considered, I'd give it a pretty high mark. I thought it was pretty well orchestrated and in a lot of good spots. And everyone out there seemed like they were pretty, you know, bent on making it a good match. So give it a, you know, a high mark. You know, I applaud those guys for putting their necks on the line and going out and delivering
especially
the goods.
Especially someone like Randy Orton, who got cut open pretty badly as well. That was a pretty legit cut there. Toph, we have about 3 minutes left. Final take on the last match tonight with John Cena becoming the new champion.
I'm on the opposite of Bruce. I thought this was a really horrible match. This is the worst Money in the Bank match I've ever seen. It was just bad from top to bottom. It was very sloppy. There were hardly any interesting or entertaining spots at all. Many of the people in the match are not over. Fans didn't care. No one cares about Del Rio. No one cares about Sheamus. No one cares about Cena. No one cares about Orton. Nobody was really over except really Roman Reigns and I guess Bray Wyatt. Cena didn't do anything. He wasn't going to take any dangerous bumps in the match because he's their golden boy, so WWE doesn't want to risk any serious injury. Pretty much the whole match, he did nothing. He just took a spot and was just unconscious, doing nothing for like 5 minutes, got up, took another spot, unconscious for 5 minutes, and just looped the whole match. It was just boring. It was a very boring, unorganized, sloppy match. And then when it was over, Cena won, and more WWE propaganda saying Cena was the best WWE champion of all time, blah, blah, blah. Pretty much this was just a total stinker. It's a horrible match.
Toast, the opinionist on our show. Bobby, your final thoughts on this last match with John Cena going over and, you know, maybe it's just some Randy Orton got cut up pretty bad, too.
Actually, it was actually, even whether it was legitimate or cut or not, but it was actually, you know, relieving to actually see some color in the WWE for once. You know, it kind of makes no sense. We have Extreme Rules or a cage match or a ladder match, and, you know, it's supposed to be the big blow-off for a feud, and, you know, nobody's bleeding. But I thought, as far as the match was, I thought it was all right. You know, I agree with Toph said, you know, like, a lot of the guys in there really had no business being in there. But, you know, I guess, like, you know, with WWE, they kind of wanted to play it safe. Like, but storyline-wise, you know, they continued the feud with the Authority, with Roman Reigns, Kane, and Orton. And also, like, you know, I like what Bruce said, you pretty much everyone can just see that Cena was going to be winning the belt, like when he had him come out and interrupt Stephanie, I don't know how many weeks ago that night on Raw. So they pretty much, with this match, played it safe and as a way to continue their stories and whatever they're going to do tomorrow night on Raw.
Yep, so Raw will be a tune-in spot tomorrow night. We will have a show, as we always do, Raw reaction after Raw. Tune in tomorrow night for PWP Radio. Great night of professional wrestling, as always. I really did enjoy the show. Like I said, some of the filler matches could have been kind of tossed out, but I think the main matches, I think they delivered on their end. Bruce, we want to thank you for coming on the air, as always, and we have Heartbeat Radio next week. So, again, thank you, Bruce, for joining us tonight for PWP Radio, as always. And always, your strong opinions on pro wrestling and on this pay-per-view. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate your participation and everyone else's. And I look forward to next week. Hang in there, everyone. Look forward to next week. All the best.
Thank you very much, Bruce. Thank you very much to Bobby. And thank you very much to Toe for joining us tonight. Remember, PWP Radio is on at least four times a week. You can check out Heartbeat Radio, Raw Reaction, as well as Greg DeMarco. Check out all of our shows here on PWP Radio and go to ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. Thank you and have a great night.